We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Audacy put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Audacy. Visit ads.audacy.com.
Joining us now on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline is Sherrod Blakely. He covers the Celtics in the NBA for NBC Sports Boston. And another Syracuse alum. I can't get away from you guys, all you Syracuse alum, Sherrod. I'm a little...
We are everywhere.
That's amazing.
You know, I know it. Everyone knows it.
I'm bitter, man, because I went to Brockport. You know Brockport at all?
Yeah, SUNY Brockport. I'm familiar with it.
So I went to Brockport, you know, and they have a good radio program, and we get no love whatsoever, and Syracuse guys just take over everything.
Well, you got to change that, man. You got to be the game changer, man.
I hope I am.
On the map.
That's right. We got to start spreading the word of the Golden Eagles, man. Anyway.
There you go.
Yeah. Sherrod, we appreciate you joining us. Obviously, you know, this series has been, you know, I want to say strange, but I don't know that it is. I mean, I guess it's maybe the sign of the times. It seems like, do you think it's revisionist history? I've been saying, like, it seems like home court means more than it ever did. Is that revisionist history? Or you think it's always been the case? Because it's, I mean, the way Boston played at home was so great. And they were horrible here. The Cavs were horrible in Boston, and they were great here. How do you explain that difference?
Well, I think it means a lot to these particular teams because I don't think either one of these teams, just the way they're built, have the ability to just frankly just show up and just beat the crap out of you, whether it's home or away. I mean, you look on the other side of the ledger out west, you know, Golden State, they're so deep and talented. I mean, four perennial all-star types, they can beat you anywhere. Same thing with Houston and all that offensive firepower that they present. But when you look at Boston, you look at Cleveland, you know, they're more of a niche-type team. And for them, they know how to win. They win with defense. They win with the collective efforts of the crew. As great as LeBron is, he's not going to win a game if he doesn't get at least one or two other guys really stepping up their play. And because of that, it's easier to kind of get it going when you're in your own building and you're comfortable. I mean, you look no further than George Hill. I mean, he's a completely different player at the Q than he was in Boston. And then conversely, you look at a guy like, you know, Terry Rozier. It's the same thing. I mean, great at home, not so great on the road. So home court absolutely, I think, means a lot more to these two teams than it does the other teams out west.
Yeah, obviously, you know, Boston, a good road team during the regular season, but you take Kyrie Irving away and all of that seems to just dissipate. That Boston-Milwaukee series, first round, just sticks with me and how between Rozier, between Brown, between Tatum, I know they're young guys, but it just seemed as if it's just too much of a struggle playing away from the Garden. What has them so comfortable at the Garden, though, that where you believe, okay, for games five, game seven, they'll have it all right?
Well, I think, you know, first of all, for games one and two, I think they were playing with house money. And as far as no one really expected them to win the series against Cleveland. And for them being at home, they just played a lot more free. And I think for them, that's a big part of this. You know, young guys, they need to play free and without thought and just processing all that's going on and just play the game. And I think it's easier to do that when all that you're hearing is encouragement all night long. And you know, again, that goes for Cleveland as well. But clearly, you know, they're a much better team at home than they were at the TD Garden. And I think really in this series, that's going to be the difference. I mean, from before we played a single game, I thought Boston would win it in seven because I thought home court advantage was going to be the difference. But I will say this, though. I thought Cleveland would split games one and two, and I thought Boston would split games three and four. So I anticipated we'd be in a two-all tie right now. I just didn't think it would come about with the home team winning every game.
We're talking with Sherrod Blakely, who covers the Celtics in the NBA, NBC Sports. Boston series tied 2-2 as you head to Boston. You know, I think fans get caught up in momentum, but I think we've learned that momentum is, like we've been talking about, is the home court. So as bad as the Celtics have played in games three and four, are you confident personally that they will bounce back in game five? And or did maybe beyond the home court, did the Cavs find something with putting Tristan, you know, switching it up defensively with Al Horford, and could that factor in Boston as well?
It could factor in, but Al Horford, he, like his younger teammates, he's been a much better player at home than he's been on the road. And, you know, I think we'll see, and I don't know who will be the victim, but we've seen in this series is that one key player on the road team gets in foul trouble. Every game has been like that. And so it'll be interesting to see who that one player will be for Cleveland. I know if you're the Boston Celtics, you like that one player. If you could pick one other than LeBron James, obviously, you'd probably pick Tristan Thompson. His activity on the glass keeps a lot of possessions alive. And Kevin Love, you feel there's some things you can do to limit his effectiveness. But Tristan Thompson and that energy effort that he brings, that's been a big problem for Boston in this series. And he's going to certainly have an impact in Game 5. But if you're the Boston Celtics, if there's one guy you'd like to see, you know, maybe have to go to the bench earlier than usual, Tristan Thompson is that guy.
Yeah, and Ty Lue made the switch, and we got to give him as much credit as we can. He was right with Tristan. I keep waiting for Brad Stevens to make that counter move, make that adjustment, as he's just kind of sat back and watched. What do you see for Game 5? Any changes?
I think there'll certainly be that. That'll be a topic of discussion. And really, this is, you know, the honeymoon is officially over now for Brad Stevens. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, he's been, you know, widely praised for his coaching acumen, his X's and O's, his, you know, ATO after timeout calls. And deservedly so. But in this series, you know, Cleveland has been able to get Terry Rozier matched up with someone bigger, stronger, consistently. He hasn't made an adjustment with that. Cleveland is winning the battle on the boards, has not made an adjustment with that. LeBron James is getting his points, and his guys around him are also starting to catch a little bit of fire. Hasn't made a significant adjustment with that either in games 3 and 4. And so really, you know, this is the first time Brad Stevens is kind of, you know, catching some criticism, and to me, deservedly so. I mean, this is when Brad Stevens should shine. The ability to make changes and adjustments and adapt on the fly. He's done it in the past, has not happened in games 3 or 4. It'll be interesting to see what he does in game 5.
Sherrod, how engaged has Kyrie Irving been with this team, whether it's in practice or on the bench? I mean, is he locked in or is he just along for the ride right now?
He's as locked in as you can be, knowing that you have no shot of getting on the floor, which I think for him, it's a tough pill to swallow. I've seen him at times, you know, around the practice facility, just taking some shots after the guys are done doing what they do. But he has always made himself open and available to these guys. I know he's had conversations with Terry Rozier, trying to keep him up and keep him encouraged and engaged and things of that nature. But there's only so much he can do. And you know, the thing about Kyrie, and you guys know this, he knows what this time of the year is like.
Yep.
He knows that you can't really have too many voices in your head because there's so much that you're trying to process to help the team winning. So he's been there for them if they need him, but he's not really impressing himself upon them because he knows that they're trying to figure out a lot of things on the fly, and having another voice in their head, that may not necessarily be the best thing for them.
Sherrod, I got to say, I'm really angry with the Boston media. You guys have failed to do something about Aaron Baines' man bun. I mean, it is quite obnoxious. What are you guys doing to counteract the man bun at this moment?
Listen here. Have you seen Aaron Baines up front? I tell you what. You go up and tell him to get rid of the man bun, and I will gladly come right behind you with my shovel
and
scrape you up off the pavement. That is a big, big man.
Oh, man.
We're used to the man bun, so we dealt with that with Kelly Olynyk, and frankly, you know, Aaron isn't as versatile with his man bun as Kelly Olynyk because obviously he doesn't have as much hair, and I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
I'm okay with that, and as long as Aaron doesn't punch me in the face, I'm going to stay okay with that.
How did we get here? We went from having a goon-up series. We went to physicality. I thought at some point we'd go through Kevin Love leaping in front of Marcus Morris, but now we're having fun with man buns.
I get it.
Yeah, the series, though. The series has kind of shifted. I do see people talking about that, though, that play with Kevin Love and Marcus Morris last night. Is there anything to it? Maybe the NBA officiating? I know some people are very upset with the direction the game seemed to go last night. I'm not one to believe that there's necessarily something there, but you look at the play with Love and Marcus Morris, and you wonder yourself how to get an offensive foul on that one.
Well, here's the thing about that play, and I went back and I went back and looked at a lot of Marcus Morris's 3 points, and that's typically how he lands. Particularly when he's coming off that curl because he's going to his left, he's fading away, and so I don't know how. I mean, other than Ray Allen, who could make that catch and shoot and just go straight up and down, most people tend to drift a little bit. To me, that was either a foul on Kevin Love or a no call. I personally would have preferred a no call because I thought in that situation, that would have set the tone for it being one of those games where they're going to let the guys play and let them figure it out. I thought that was a huge play in the game. And I always, I'm leery of talking too much about officials because, frankly, their bad calls made both ways. And they make more right calls than wrong calls. But, man, when they get it wrong, damn, do they get it wrong.
Yeah.
And that to me, that should have been a no call or a foul on Kevin Love. And if you're feeling funny about making that call on a guy on a home team, then just don't make a call at all.
Yeah, I agree. And I agree with your other sentiment, Sherrod, because, you know, people, I feel like fans bring up the referee. Fans always think the referees are cheating against their team. And just like fans think the national broadcasters are rooting against their team. And my statement to that is always, you're biased, they're not. So I think there are calls that are bad. No doubt about it. It happens in every game. But and I know with Donaghy and all that stuff, if you think they're cheating, then what's the point of watching the game? And if you don't think they're cheating, then bad calls are going to happen. Don't whine about it to me.
Yeah, the one thing I always worry about, though, when I'm watching those type of games, there's certain officials that you almost get the sense that they want to be part of the show.
Oh, no doubt. Yes.
And whether it's the demonstrative manner in which they make calls or the fact that they make calls like that leave you talking about them in that call the next day. We had a couple officials like that last night who kind of fall into that. They walk that very fine line between calling the game the way they see it and calling it in a way that draws attention to them. I don't like it. I don't like it at all. And that Marcus Morris play, that was such a pivotal play in the game. The Celtics are starting to get a little bit of traction. And that play, even though they scored, I think, right after that, and then Cleveland quickly called a timeout, it still took away from the vibe, the rhythm that they were having. And, again, Cleveland still would have won the game, I think. But those are the type of plays that, as an official, let the players decide how this turns out. Because if you don't make a call on that at all, then who knows how this game would have turned out. But the fact that you did, you drew attention to yourself, to the play, and that's not what this should be about. It should be about the players.
And nobody knows how to subtweet Scott Foster better than you. I'll give you all the credit in the world for that one. Either way, when you talk about differences and surprises throughout these first four games, what's the one thing that really stood out to you on Boston's angle that maybe you didn't see coming?
I would probably say the disappearing act of Jason Tatum on the road. He's been one of those guys. He's just been solid throughout the entire season and was really their best scorer throughout most of the playoffs. And those last couple games, he's not looking to shoot the three at all. I mean, he took eight threes in the first two games. He took a total of two on the road. He has to get back to being, I think, a little bit more aggressive, particularly when shooting the three. Because the one thing about Cleveland, and they've always been like this, in my opinion, they've been pretty good at contesting shots off the dribble. Tristan Thompson, I think, does a good job of protecting that rim. LeBron, when he's engaged the way I think he's been the last couple of games defensively, he can be very good. George Hill with those long, ridiculously long arms. This is not a team that's easy to score on off the drive. But if you've got an open jump shot and you're Jason Tatum with a 7-foot wingspan, you're 6'7", 6'8", and you've got J.R. Smith on you, you can shoot over the top of him without worrying about your shot getting blocked. He needs to get back to thinking along those lines. And that has been surprising to me because I always saw him as a kid that quickly figured out what he needs to do, what areas he can exploit. And I think the three-point shot with a smaller defender on him, that's an area that he can exploit more so than taking it off the dribble where he's running into a lot of trees.
Sherrod, yesterday LeBron broke another record. It seems like every day in the playoffs he breaks another record, right?
Most, I know, right?
Most field goals. It's ridiculous. Where do you stand on the LeBron versus Michael debate?
Oh, gosh. I hate that question. But I understand why you ask. Because, I mean, they're both – I mean, obviously, when you're talking about those two, you're talking about two of the all-time greats to ever lace them up in the NBA. But I go with Michael. I give him the edge only because I think – here's the thing. If you're talking about pound-for-pound talent and ability, then I go with LeBron. But I've always balanced that with what I believe is just the ability to win at the highest of levels. And LeBron can take some teams that, frankly, I mean, LeBron is great at leading not-so-great teams to just the pinnacle of potential success. But Michael is he's the deal sealer. Michael takes his teams all the way, and they win it. That's what he does. And to me, that is that one quality about him that I've always put him a little, just a notch above LeBron in that regard. But let's be honest, though. I mean, if you are a player in the NBA, and you are legitimately in the conversation of being one of the best to ever play the game, you can't go wrong with that.
That's right.
I mean, even if someone says you're the second or third best all time,
I'll take that. Yeah. I think LeBron will be okay with that. But certainly, I let's put it this way. If someone says LeBron is the greatest of all time, I'm not going to be all that feisty and just, no, that can't be. No, he deserves to be in that conversation, and an argument can be made for him to be that guy. But me, personally, I would take MJ.
Yeah, it's a great convo to have with some drinks at 1 in the morning, but if you're getting bent out of shape over it at 2 in the
right.
afternoon on a Tuesday, maybe not.
Yeah, the people that annoy me in the conversation, and I love what you said, Sherrod, because I feel exactly, like I lean towards LeBron by a pinch, but I feel exactly the same way you do, is that I don't understand the people, and usually it's with the Jordan people, but right. it can be both. The people that say, oh, it's this guy, it's not even a debate. I mean, that's stupid.
Well, it is a debate.
Yeah, of course.
I mean, if you just simply focus on the stats, forget about wins and losses, but just the stats that those guys put up, that makes it a debate. And then when you interject wins and losses and titles and all that, it continues to be a debate. That's the beautiful thing about the comparison. I love the fact that we have a guy in our era right now who you can legitimately say is one of the all-time greats, and some right. can make an argument he is the greatest of all time. And when that argument is made, someone can counter, well, I think this guy's the greatest of all time. And that's the beautiful thing about
that's
the
right.
base. I give LeBron a lot of credit. He has done exactly what he was, I think, given, you know, the talent to do, and that has become one of the all-time greats when he came into the NBA. And much props to him for living up to that promise.
It's amazing because you think about where he was as a 15-year-old at St. Vincent St. Mary, how anybody could live up to that is kind of unreal. We'll get you out of here on this one. How do you see the series ending up in 7 games, 6 games, Boston's favor, Celtics, Cavs favor? What do you have?
I'm going to roll with 7. That's the number I began with. And up right now, I had this series tied up at 2-2, so I'm feeling good about that. I think it'll go home team wins the rest of the way.
Sherrod, we appreciate the time, man. Thanks for joining us.
No problem. Take care, guys.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.